Hello, everybody! Welcome back to S&P Now. This is episode 41 for April 8th. Josh, who's sponsoring us today?
This week's episode is brought to you by Silver Valley Tire. Spring is here. Time for new tires. Silver Valley Tire is currently offering a $70 mail-in rebate from now until April 20th off select Cooper tires. Also through the month of April, if you buy a set of four tires, you will get signed up for a raffle to win a free TV. Stop in at 407 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg or call 208-784-1181 with any questions.
I've mentioned it before, but they helped me out with some wheel bearings not too long ago.
You got your bearings straight?
Got my bearings straight now.
Yeah.
Josh, early visit from Pun Santa in this episode.
Yes.
You were warming up beforehand, so we just had to get it right to it.
It's been a while.
Josh, what is going on? I know there isn't. This is a complicated answer because there isn't much going on right now.
I'm so tired of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And I think I'm even more tired of how people are reacting to
it. Oh, it's bad. It's bad. Because as more people are cooped up, you're starting to get extremes from both sides. You're starting to get the ones that are freaking out about this like it's the Black Plague. And, you know, it's going to remove, you know, half of the population of the Earth. And then there's the other camp that isn't taking it seriously at all. And kind of thinks that it's whole, maybe might be made up.
I mean,
or don't care, but I guess if we're getting real local, there's the.
I'm just gonna be real with you. I've started labeling people on social media. You are a toilet paper hoarder, and you are not. I know who they are.
Well, if you haven't noticed, the New York Times did a piece on North Idaho and how the Liberty Movement could derail. Flattening the curve, so to speak, because we've got people here that are
nuts,
very passionate about the Constitution, Josh.
Oh, right, nuts. There's a word for that, I believe.
Yes. So, I mean, so we can actually let's get into that before we get into our paper because we're not going well. I think did we throw that story into any of our papers?
No,
we might have had the sheriff. Sheriff might be inside one of these.
Oh, the Bonner County
Sheriff
character?
Sheriff Wheeler, is that his name?
Yeah, it is.
Is he in here?
So we're jumping right to regional, and what better place to find your local lunatic than Bonner County?
That's not fair, Josh. There are a lot of level-headed people up in Bonner County. I love Sandpoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and they're everywhere. We've got them here. They're just a little bit quieter.
I'm going to tell you right now, the craziest, most lunacy, the craziest stuff.
We have some fun Law Day stories.
They have the most fun stories.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like I said, they still have never topped the Moses Lake ninja sword versus taser fight.
Right.
But that's like a one-off.
Right.
In Bonner County, they're like, you know, so, cyber stalker gets arrested after 6 months on the lam, only to be found bivouacking near the side of the Ruby Ridge crisis. What like
great,
the weirdest,
yeah,
the weirdest horrible thing, and it always happens in Bonner County.
It does seem like it is there. Shout out to our sister paper.
Oh, yeah, the Bonner County Daily Bee has
They're
no
good
shortage
at finding
of,
it. They're good at finding it and letting people know. Shout
feel
out to
like
them.
They have some of the most quality subject material like presented to
they
them.
Just, yeah, they just find it.
And I always love reading it.
There you
it.
Go. I love it.
I don't envy them.
So this one, I don't think actually, I mean, the Bee didn't have to dig hard for this one because the Bonner County Sheriff, Sheriff Wheeler, Daryl Wheeler to be exact, basically came out and wrote a letter, an open letter, saying that Governor Brad Little's stay-at-home order was unconstitutional and has basically blown the coronavirus pandemic out of proportion. And
a claim that has since been refuted that it's not.
Oh, yeah. He's now legal. Getting directly, I mean, the medical staff at, is it Bonner Medical Center? What is it?
I believe
it?
It's Bonner Medical Center.
Something like,
Bonner,
yeah.
Bonner Hospital.
Something like that. They have essentially called him out and said, like, look, he's free to his own opinion, but, you know, there's no basis in fact around it. it's very interesting. So what it has sparked as also Bonner is also represented by
Bonner General Hospital.
Bonner General Hospital. Thank you. This was quickly jumped up on by other constitutionalists in the state, not to mention Representative Heather Scott, who has a track record of this kind of behavior. She jumped on that as well and kind of has essentially created a fairly, I wouldn't say large, but significant number of people that have basically kind of called out Governor Little and anybody else who really is trying to take the coronavirus seriously.
You know, you follow this up with the irresponsible rhetoric from the pastor in Coeur d'Alene, who's also a Idaho state representative, and you partner it with the comments made by Heather Scott. I mean, she's another state representative. She's claimed that this is some sort of like biblical pestilence. I mean, we are seeing the stage five, the craziest of the craziest.
The most extreme underreaction. Because granted, you and I have both experienced people who are overreacting currently.
Yeah, we have.
So, I mean, there's definitely two extremes here that are at play.
And let us clarify, we're definitely both very much in favor of people following stay-home orders and flattening the curve, and we believe in the severity. Hygienic. And yeah, what we don't believe in is not listening to direct orders from the governor by arguing religion and constitutionalism as the reason why you're not. And we're also not out like specifically coughing on people because we don't believe in it. We are just of the mindset.
But don't be so afraid that you think that this is like you can't leave your house or anything like that, because it's not. We've reported several times here in our COVID-19 updates that 80% of people who catch this disease will not develop symptoms at all, or will develop very mild symptoms that they'll get over it. In a matter of you and I, before we even started recording, we talked about Senator Rand Paul. He was the first federal legislator that was diagnosed with COVID-19. He was asymptomatic, and now he's fine.
Yeah.
And that guy's missing part of his lung.
And part of the other one.
Yeah.
He's like missing a full.
Yeah.
Full and then some decimal points.
Yeah. So it's not something that, you know, if you catch it, it's a death sentence and it's just this horrible apocalypse that a representative would lead you to believe. But it needs to be taken seriously. You should be hygienic. Like you always should be. You should always wash your hands. You should always take care of yourself and stay clean.
I think we're going to introduce a new topic today, or a new term today from now on, because I'm sure people don't like being called crazy, even though that's probably the easiest. We're going to measure people by their level of COVIDity.
So what, from one toilet paper roll to zero toilet paper rolls?
Yeah, on the scale of 1 to 5 toilet paper rolls, your COVIDity is probably right around 4 if you are Sheriff Wheeler. Maybe even a 5 if you're Representative Heather Scott, and probably somewhere between the two of them if you're Tim Remington. Your COVIDity levels.
There you go. So we could follow up on that. Startlingly high. Yeah, Tim, also a representative of the great state of Idaho. That was a note that was passed under our door. If you're wondering, it's just an update on. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
We'll get to it in a second. I have it pulled up from Panhandle Health.
Tim
Remington, he actually took a lot of flack the week previously. He tried to run... for the Silver Valley residents, you might be familiar with Mr. Remington, because or rather Representative Remington now, because he held services here in the Silver Valley not too long ago.
Back they weren't in the Silver Valley. They were at Canyon Elementary School back when that was called the Cataldo Lighthouse.
Okay.
That was his church that he ran out there. Gotcha. Out of the Canyon Gymnasium.
So he has some local ties here.
Yeah.
But he took a lot of flack for holding church service, not last Sunday, but the Sunday before.
Yeah.
And basically because of the pushback, the board for the church that he's at, is it Awake? What is it called?
The
Altar.
Altar Church.
Altar Church. The board at the Altar Church basically voted that he cannot do it again. Right. He went... public and said he doesn't agree with the decision, but he's going to respect it, which is, I mean, doubling down on... It's probably something that's not very smart.
I can't imagine being appointed by the governor to the House of Representatives, the State House of Representatives, and then just being like...
Flaunting right in front of the governor's face that like you're not going to listen to him.
Openly defying him. Yeah. I'm not saying you shouldn't stand up for what you believe in and all that, but at the same time, like...
Use common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, so Sheriff Wheeler, back to what we started on with, one of his quotes in his letter was, quote, "I do not believe that suspending the Constitution was wise because COVID-19 is nothing like the plague. We were misled by some public health officials, and now it is time to reinstate our Constitution," Wheeler said in the letter.
So... We were misled by... All of our public health officials?
He said some.
Right, but I've been hard-pressed to find a public health official who's like,
It's not that big. One of the great things about writing these COVID-19 updates in every one of our editions so people can stay informed on what's going on here locally is that I get to speak with Dr. David Lawhorn with SMC.
Yeah,
Shoshone Medical Center, and I love speaking with him about this because he is so, as a matter of fact, he's not, you know, trying to scare people, but he's also not downplaying it. Like he's telling us what it is, and right now he's most worried about nursing homes.
Right,
you know, that 20% that are in the older age category or have pre-existing conditions. This virus can genuinely kill you.
He's in a pretty good spot because he is what the. Pardon me, the lead medical expert in a community that has a substantial retirement age population. Yes. So he can really take a hard line and focus on the people at risk.
Right.
Which also then I think.
And that's the whole point of this whole flatten the curve thing is that we. You know, young folks like you and me, they're not necessarily worried that we're going to catch it and die. It's more of, we'll catch it, have mild or no symptoms, and accidentally spread it to somebody who could die.
We're going
to
catch it, and then I'm going to go lick my grandmother's face.
Correct.
And she's going to...
Exactly.
Then be COVID positive.
Exactly. So, and that's the worry, is that we're trying to limit it to the people that are most at risk.
And so, in that... We've had a number of residents because that focus by Dr. Lawhorn is very, very wise. Certain people don't seem to agree with the emphasis being put on the at-risk population. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that kind of show in the comments on our social media pages where people are demanding to know information that, quite frankly, isn't there to be given.
We'll get to that here in a second. We'll expound on that, but we have
an expert here who's totally
yes.
shifted our focus the right way.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not a big county.
No.
So our focus and our focus should be on the at-risk population, which unfortunately, I don't want to say unfortunately, that sounds negative, but that just happens to be the largest chunk mm-hmm. of our population mm-hmm. is either retirement age mm-hmm. or children. Uh-huh. So the at-risk is what's getting the attention right now.
There you go. So let's jump over to our Friday, April 3rd headlines. Starting with that, with the COVID. So every edition we've been, like I mentioned before, we've been running a local COVID update. Uh-huh. All the, you know, the general press releasey stuff for region and state and national, we've been throwing that on the inside. But we've made sure to craft a local-oriented COVID-19 update. And this one in particular, this one focused on what nursing homes, specifically Mountain Valley of Cascadia. You can even talk a little bit about this one, Josh.
Yeah.
Because we co-byline this one. These updates always start with, you know, the latest from Dr. Lawhorn and SMC. And then this one in particular, though, we shifted to because he's put such a strong emphasis on protecting nursing homes.
Right.
I'm going to, off the top of my head, I remember one of the stories that he shared with me was some of the first deaths that occurred over in Washington State. A majority of those deaths came from one nursing home because it infected one person and spread through the home.
Right over there in Western Washington.
Yeah, Richland, Kirkland,
something like that. Oh man,
Yeah.
Kirkland, Washington.
Kirkland. Yeah. That sounds right. Yeah. That sounds right. So it started there. So keeping nursing homes and, I mean, it's a worst case scenario. You've got a place where people can't leave or you shouldn't leave. It makes it, and because of that, it makes it very difficult for them to social distance. And they're in the older age group where they're most at risk. So it's almost, you know, a storm.
Right.
A brewing storm. A gathering storm, rather. Brewing storm, that doesn't
gathering
make sense.
Storm.
Gathering a storm. So we actually talked to Mountain Valley of Cascadia, talked to them about what they're doing to protect people. Josh, you want to chime in on that?
Well, I mean, we can definitely talk about it. We had a chance to talk to Emily Coolin, who we always...
love to talk to
we
Emily.
We always shout out Emily. Genuinely...
We got
to
have her on the podcast. Yourself.
Yeah, genuinely one of the best people we know. And her facility, Mountain Valley Cascadia, one of the standard bearers in skilled nursing care facilities, you know, her main concern, and she said in a quote, was, "We're restricting visitors, screening staff, monitoring everything. Infection control is at the forefront for any healthcare provider, and Cascadia has employed rigorous infection control protocols since its inception."
In a press release that Cascadia, so like above Emily, released, they talked about some of the steps that they were that they've implemented at not only Mountain Valley and Kellogg, but all of their facilities.
And those steps are limiting exposure by temporarily prohibiting outside visitors into the communities.
That's pretty common at all. Yeah.
Monitoring residents' health to detect potential health issues before they become a problem.
I would assume this means like watching if they have fevers or something like that.
Here's a big one, and this one's kind of one of the unique ones. Utilizing telemedicine so healthcare professionals can engage one-on-one with their residents. So that is using things like Skype and Zoom and FaceTime so that doctors who normally come in, I mean, these are people in these retirement homes who a lot of times have to, when you're put in a retirement home, a lot of times you're not only dealing with physical ailments, but as the mental health begins to slip a little bit, that usually is what puts people into these assisted living facilities, is because they're no longer mentally capable of taking care of themselves a lot of times. Uh-huh. So when you're a patient here and you're used to having one-on-one time with a doctor who talks to you about your memory or things like that, you start taking that away from people, they start regressing very, very hard and very, very rapidly. Mm-hmm. So they're being able to say, hey, you know what, Dr. So-and-so can't come in to see you, but we're going to put him up on your iPad here,
right,
and you're going to be able to talk to him still. Mm-hmm. That is a huge benefit for the residents there who can't afford to give up any ground as far as their health goes.
Absolutely.
The next step is taking this very seriously and exercising an abundance of caution.
Also limiting travel of our employees.
Oh, I didn't see. Limiting travel.
Jumped over that one. You're good.
I did. Limiting travel of employees and health screening prior to work. So, you know, if your employees...
Making sure an employee doesn't infect the entire community.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And then taking this very seriously and exercising an abundance of caution, also known as DUH.
Conducting COVID-19 specific training for caregivers and medical professionals.
Which is evolving daily.
Right.
That's like a daily briefing.
As we get more tests, and we'll talk about that later.
And then keeping up on the current updates from CMS, which is Chief Medical Staff, and the Center for Disease Control. Sure.
We're still learning about COVID-19. There are still things that we're coming out every day about it. I mean, apparently cats can get COVID-19 now.
Large felines, which isn't it only appropriate that during this time that a tiger...
Right.
Tiger.
It's all about tigers right now.
Poor tigers are being abused more during the coronavirus than anyone, I think.
Well, arguably they could get more help now.
You might think that. You might hope that anyway.
Right. But well, they are being protected by Carol Baskin, so.
Ooh, could say some things about that lady. But anyway. No, you can tell that the facilities, especially Mountain Valley Cascadia, are really taking it to heart, trying to really, 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 I don't want to say get a jump on it, because no one can really get a jump on something they don't understand, but they're staying with the virus. Every time the virus changes, they make another change to adapt. So good job being done by Mountain Valley Cascadia, which serving that at-risk group of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, all those COVID-19 updates, those are, I mean, if there's any big news that comes out, we release it in that. So let's go, let's jump to the center. Cereal from the Heart, Josh?
Cereal from the Heart. That was,
story did quite well in our
Yeah, that story did well. That was, I had a chance to just go talk to Lori Sawyer, and, she and her husband own Silver Valley, or I'm sorry, Shoshone Glass in Kellogg. And, they had been watching the news and they had wanted to help some way. They're very involved in the school district. Lori is a coach. A cheerleader coach. And so her heart was just broken. She's got granddaughters, a granddaughter who's a senior, and I think another one who's a freshman. So she's very involved in the school district, and she just wanted to help. And she saw on the news that a man over on the East Coast had decided, you know, with these kids being out of school, meals become kind of a scary thought because a lot of the kids in the school depend on the school for their breakfast and lunch 9 months out of the year. You know, when you're thinking about 2/3 of your meals for 75% of the year, that's a pretty scary number if suddenly, you know, you lose out on 2.5 months worth. So the plan was to buy some cereal and then just put it out on social media. Hey, anyone who needs some breakfast, come get some cereal. We'll have cereal for you. So over the course of the last week, and I think even a little bit this week, Lori's just been having a bunch of cereal in the back of her car, and people roll up, and if they need cereal, she comes out, opens the trunk, throws some gloves on, and hey, how many kids you got? If it's a high number of kids, usually she sends them with 2 or 3 bags of cereal. Like, it's not even like a one box of cereal per family. She's trying to gauge it based off the number of kids you have, and it's just a really heartwarming story to see her and her husband go above and beyond to make sure that, one, the kids remember that there's still a community here who wants to take care of them and appreciates them just being here. And two, cares about them eating, which is a huge thing. Absolutely. So, yeah, that was a good story to write.
Yes, absolutely. Pretty well on social media. Heartwarming thing that's going on.
I think we talked about the earthquake briefly last week because it was right before we recorded last week's episode, but... we did just a kind of a final update on that. That earthquake was a 6.5, a big fella, second strongest earthquake Idaho's had in recorded history.
Wow.
And then the central Idaho area where it happened near what is it, Challis, experienced like some 60 aftershocks varying in size from the small to in the right over 4.0.
Wow.
Which, I mean, a 4.0 earthquake here, we would probably notice it because it's not common, but down there, you know, it probably wasn't even noticed. A lot of people were really, really, really scared. That kind of scared some folks. But just to clarify, the seismic activity that happened there is... geological regions were on giant plates called tectonic plates, and the plates move around, and that's what causes earthquakes. The geological region where this earthquake happened is not connected to the geological system that Yellowstone exists in. So, no, this earthquake wasn't like some harbinger of super volcano death. They're not related. I spoke with a volcanologist on Twitter, like, that was arguably one of the most grown-up sentences I've ever said. And then also reports from the Coeur d'Alene Press where they talked to a volcanologist who kind of explained some stuff as well. Just not anything to stress about. It was an earthquake. They happen. Fortunately, according to the last time I checked, there were no deaths and no major damage recorded other than some like rock slides and things like that.
Gotcha. Jumping down to the bottom of the page, fire destroys summer cabin. Idaho State Fire Marshal's office investigated the cause of a fire that burned a Metamont summer cabin to the ground Tuesday morning. So that would have been, this was on April 3rd, so probably March 30th?
Probably.
Yeah, something like that. Shoshone County Fire District Number 2 responded to that. As many know, even though Metamont is in Kootenai County, Fire District Number 2 stretches all the way to Metamont. They've got a firehouse out there. So the first people that were on scene actually was a District 2 volunteer that lives out near Metamont, saw the smoke, got on scene. Unfortunately, by the time he and two other volunteers got on scene with a truck, the house was already completely engulfed in flames. 15 minutes later, after reinforcements came from Kellogg and Pinehurst and Cataldo, the house was completely gone. The house caved in. It was a 1970s A-frame structure with no insulation, so it wasn't really made to withstand any fire or keep it down. Thankfully, nobody was injured. Nobody was inside when it happened, and they're still investigating the cause.
Fires.
Yep. Happens.
This is right about the time that they start really popping up too. I think if I remember right,
we might become. Yeah, that's the last thing we need is now forest fire season to pop up.
Well, I mean, last year this was right about the time our house fire season kind of kicked off. So
it is. It's like phases of the moon. It does happen.
It really is.
Yeah. So that's it. It was a pretty tight.
It was a tight paper. And you know it's just kind of. We're dealing with this as it comes. I mean, I think you guys have all noticed most of our stories tend to have a COVID theme one way or another. There's something that will tie them back, whether it's something got canceled because of
COVID. Not always. I don't think COVID was responsible for the fire.
I believe it was. I'm going to say that someone started the fire.
I'm sure that the folks that believe that the 5G towers are causing corona would agree with you.
Yeah, I heard that house was actually put on a spot where they planned to build a 5G tower, and someone burned it down because it was a program. What they don't know is they just did the construction company a favor by handling the demolition cost of the cabin.
For those, we didn't write a story about this, but I'm telling you right now, 5G is not causing coronavirus.
Dude, I get people sending me messages on Facebook. Man, you better watch this before they take it down.
We'll put it this. Please do your own research. If we do a story on it, I'll go more in depth.
Or maybe don't.
I'm going to just leave you with this. You get more radiation from the sun than you do from a 5G. So if you're afraid of sunlight damaging you, then sure, be worried about 5G maybe.
What about moonlight? We did have a supermoon.
I don't know. I think with a supermoon, you'd be more afraid of werewolves.
That's a legit fear of mine. I mean, moonlight is just reflections.
Come to the Silver Valley to get your silver bullets.
Is it reflections or refractions? When the light bounces off the moon and that's what lights up the moon, the sunlight bounces off the moon and that's why the moon's lit up.
It doesn't refract off of the moon, it reflects
off. It reflects off the moon.
Yeah.
I always get those two mixed up.
I think.
Is it? Oh.
Refract it now. All right. Now, why don't you lead us into our Tuesday, April 7th while I Google what refracting is.
Thank you. Public schools to remain closed. This was not my headline. What the headline should have said was soft closure extended.
So for those who are not familiar with our editorial day-to-day, which I'm assuming is a lot of you, why would you know? We don't do our own layout here in the Shoshone office. We are a two-person editorial staff with a three-person advertising staff. I guess technically one of those three is a circulation director.
Also our circulation
director. Right, yeah. We wear many hats here. But in any case, we don't do our own layout. We send our stories over to the Coeur d'Alene desk, and the layout team over there does ours, along with other Hagedorn papers, the Daily Bee, the Bonner's Ferry Herald, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Sometimes we will type up a headline that works for online, because online you can type whatever you want and it'll make room. Whereas for the print, sometimes if the headline is too long, they will change it on us to make it shorter. And sometimes when they do that, the meaning that we were trying to get across is sometimes lost.
Right. So public schools are not even close to being closed. While the buildings themselves, the facilities, are closed, that is part of this soft closure. The State Board of Education decided on Monday during their conference call that they were going to extend their soft closure through the end of the 2019-2020 school year. That just means that students are not permitted to enter and utilize the buildings. Staff and administrators can still utilize the buildings as they see fit. And schools are still required to provide like meal service and digital education opportunities and things like that. There's some guidelines for a soft closure. I don't have them in front of me. There is a caveat to that soft closure, though. That soft closure was put in place with the possibility that if a local public health official comes in and deems the school safe, that classes inside the school can resume. So for us, it would be Panhandle Health. So Panhandle Health came over and said, hey, you know what, Shoshone County, you've got no confirmed cases. As long as your students are not traveling outside the county or outside of the state, we should be able to start school. They could start school. Now, the odds of that happening at this point seem pretty slim. But basically what the State Board of Education did was shift the responsibility of the hard closure from themselves and gave it back to the local communities, predominantly the local health districts and local health officials.
Mm-hmm. The waves reflect off of the moon.
Huh.
Reflection involves a change in direction of waves when they bounce off a barrier. Refraction of waves involves a change in the direction of waves as they pass from one medium to another.
Hmm.
There's also diffraction.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which much. I didn't even know was a thing.
Too deep.
I never did take a physics class. So
down the rabbit hole we go.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, sorry, continue.
So local schools are continuing to... all three local schools here in Shoshone County, that's Mullen, Wallace, and Kellogg School Districts, all put in place measures to begin digitally instructing their students mm-hmm. that were old enough to handle that, as well as preparing instructional packets, which basically turned every home in Shoshone County with school-aged children into a veritable homeschool. It's been a little frustrating, but they had the... they had the foresight to start doing this well before. I mean, Kellogg was a little bit ahead of the curve. They went into soft closure, I want to say it was March 17th, and have been in soft closure ever since. Wallace followed much later that week with their soft closure, not technically beginning until the following Monday. Mullen was like a day after Kellogg. But these schools put in effect the ability they want their kids to continue to learn. I know Dr. Nancy Larson, superintendent of Kellogg School, she's not happy with the way the State Board of Education is handling this whole thing. In fact, the criteria for the local public health officials to reopen the school. So the State Board of Education put the responsibility and onus on the Panhandle Health District. They're the ones who can say yay or nay for us opening the schools, for us five northern counties. But they didn't have any sort of established criteria for Panhandle Health District to work with. So while they said, you know, we don't want to make the call to keep schools closed until the end of the year, we want to shift that to local public health officials, they weren't even ready to give local public health officials the criteria they needed to work with to open the schools. So, you know, some frustration there. You know, there was a quote, though, from Dr. Bob Rannells, who is the superintendent of Wallace School District. And his quote was, I think, succinct. You know, we love Dr. Bob. He's kind of an old, he's an old cowboy type.
Uh-huh.
And his...
where'd you just get an email from?
I don't... was that me?
Sounded like you.
Maybe it was, man. Maybe it was. But, sorry, Apple products. We did not mean to steal your notification sound for this podcast. Buy Apple. We love it. There, we just paid for that ad. Uh-huh. We're from Dr. Bob Rannells. Here's his quote. We are going to continue things the way we have been doing... ooh, ooh. Nope, he didn't say it that way.
Try that again.
He did not have a stroke like I did. Mm-hmm. Here, we'll try it again. We are going to continue things the way we have been doing them, either through virtual learning or with packets of information. We are going to live and learn through this, but rest assured that learning will continue even if the buildings are closed. And I think that pretty much encapsulates the hopes and fears.
The children will learn.
Yes. And I think, you know what, this might be a valuable... I can tell you myself, as much as at times I've wanted to strangle my children uh-huh. in the last few weeks, I've had more conversations with my kids lately than I have probably had in the last few years. Just interacting with them on a level that we just haven't had to. Checking schoolwork. There's a different level of accountability as a parent right now, which I get if you weren't ready for it and didn't really want to do it, might be a little difficult. But at the same time, this is probably a pretty good reality check for a lot of the parents out there who maybe had tuned out what their kids were doing and had settled into a routine of just sending them off to school and letting the public school system handle their entire education.
Yeah. This is, I mean... Obviously, everybody wants the kids to go back to school as soon as possible. I don't know. Did you ever take any online classes?
A couple. I hated them. Not my
thing. Sometimes it's not for people, and other times I'll just say it. I mean, for the folks who went to college, especially, sometimes you take an online class and it's a joke.
Yeah.
You can click through stuff. You don't have to read anything. You know, it's fairly easy to get there. Now, I'm not saying I have no idea what this program that they're currently using looks like. I have absolutely no idea. But I think getting kids back into the classrooms is what everybody wants eventually.
Right. I would also even venture, you know, for a lot of these kids, the main driving force behind them going to school uh-huh. was athletics. And, you know, the Idaho High School Activities Association had kind of postponed their decision until the State Board of Education said something. And then with the State Board of Education saying, hey, we're going to extend the soft closure. Now, that really was kind of the death knell, because if one school comes back for class, that doesn't mean that everyone on their schedule is coming back.
Yep.
So, you know, for those teams that were looking to make some significant strides in their programs this season. And I mean, let's talk about how beautiful we've had this spring. We've had some cold days and we've had some snowy days, but we've had more playable spring sports days this year amid the COVID than we have in the last probably 2 or 3 years, I would venture.
Uh-huh.
You know, go outside right now. It's Wednesday afternoon. Go outside. It's beautiful out there. You go out there and tell me you don't think a game of baseball, softball, or even some golf might be nice. So, you know, public schools not closed. Soft closure. Public school buildings essentially closed. But public schools are still functioning and they're still educating our kids.
Makes sense. Let's jump around down to, you actually had the centerpiece too. We'll get to the COVID update last.
All right.
Cause that'll be a good transition.
So the centerpiece, titled Free Community Wi-Fi Now Available. The
car looks familiar.
Yeah. I had to stage a photo with my kids, or have my wife do it rather, because it's a little hard to get a hold of kids these days,
mm-hmm.
to take pictures of them. It used to be we could just go right to the high school. Hey, I need 3 kids to take a picture doing something. We could do it. And now we don't get that option. But free community Wi-Fi now available. This story was written on a partnership that had developed between many different little organizations, including the Wallace and Kellogg School Districts, the Silver Valley Economic Development Corporation, J&R Electronics, and Ednetics. So all of these groups came together to provide a Wi-Fi service
mm-hmm.
That is available for students to have access to complete homework and turn assignments in, for people who might have depended on coffee shops and cafes for their internet, for things like filing unemployment, or even searching for jobs that might be available right now during the crisis. The whole project was kind of spearheaded by Colleen Rawson, who is the Silver Valley Economic Development Coordinator, or director, rather. I'm trying to find one of her comments right here. Got to go to
A3. She's in there.
Got to go to A3 for this one, Chance. Back to A3. Where are we at?
Did you find it? Schools. No.
No.
Did you say A3? Wi-Fi, yeah. Center page.
Ah. So, you know, and this partnership with the Kellogg School District automatically kind of meant that Colleen Rawson was working with Simon Miller. Uh-huh. Simon's been a guest on here once before. And
there we go. So it's, Colleen says, it goes without saying that Simon is dedicated to our community. So he is a natural go-to for many ideas. J&R Electronics have roots in this valley and have demonstrated their dedication with being the only ISP who found a way in rather than roadblocks to provide quality internet.
So ISP, internet service provider. Rawson finished that quote up with saying it was quite phenomenal how well things worked out when we started talking at the onset. We all came together with a desire to work for the community and put together some ideas and started working to make it happen. The school district's commitment to serving our residents brought it all together. I feel that it can be a model for other communities in Idaho who need connectivity today and beyond. So right now they're working at getting locations put together. Uh-huh. The hub in Kellogg is located between the district office and what is now called the Kellogg School District Administrative Annex, which is also the old middle school. So you can go get in the parking lot there and you'll be guided to a, like if you try to connect to the community Wi-Fi.
Yep.
They'll take you and there is a password, but you go to their website and it'll
annex. I can't remember that. I've tried so hard.
Annex?
The annex.
The administrative annex.
The administrative annex.
They called it the community center.
I was just getting to community center because forever I was just calling it the old middle school.
Yeah, they called it the community center for like 3 days and they decided that it wasn't the community center. It was the administrative annex.
Yeah, and I'm working on it. I really am trying.
Yeah, and they're going to have sites in Cataldo at, I believe, probably Canyon Elementary. They're going to have one at Pinehurst Elementary. And then moving the other direction, I'm sure that, it wouldn't surprise me that Silver Hills and Wallace High School all ended up, somehow with their own hubs outside of them. So
I can see that.
Be on the lookout. They do have a website. It's kind of a weird website, to be completely honest with you. You have to visit sites. sites.google.com/view/SilverValleyWiFi
to get the password. You have to give your own password, and it is Carol Baskin.
I don't think it's Carol Baskin.
No, that's not the password.
But no, okay. No. What do you got?
It's still on you, sibling duo.
Oh. Boy.
You got bylines in this one, man.
Yeah. We've been churning out stories. You would think that with stay-home order that would
limit
too.
That a little bit.
It would extend to me and it would, you know, dry up some content. It has not. So sibling duo highlights Hall of Fame nominations. So we had six athletes from the Silver Valley get nominated for the North Idaho Hall of Fame banquet, which the reason the story's timely and on our front page is because that banquet got canceled about 2 weeks ago. It was originally scheduled for, I believe, April 26th, but the committee had the foresight to go, yeah, we don't think it's going to happen, so they pulled the plug on it.
Makes sense.
So those six athletes, we had five from Kellogg High School and one from Mullen. Sky Galloway, a senior football player up in Mullen, was nominated for the one. They break it up into divisions for certain sports. So for football, they do a 1A through 3A. And Sky Galloway was a nominee from the 1A for 3A. Sky Galloway, an all-state player out of Mullen, terrific career. Signed on to play at, I believe it was Montana Western recently. The five athletes from Kellogg, Justin Leto, also for the 1A through 3A football classification. Graydon Nearing for the 1A through 3A basketball classification. Graydon just finished up a pretty stellar basketball campaign where he just this last week was actually named to the All-State team. So good showing for him. Judson Hall He's a 1A, 3A division wrestler, Judson Hall, also another standout. Recently capped off his wrestling career with a state championship. We wrote a nice big feature on Judson a few weeks ago. And then our final two nominees, the way these banquets go is they actually cover the previous spring sport. So the 2019 or 2018-2019 spring sports, and then the 2019-2020 fall and winter sports.
Gotcha.
So Kellogg class of 2019 graduate Kat Raunhorst, who was a career stellar golfer, four-time Intermountain League medalist, one-time state champion, runner-up state medalist, just a
long list of accolades, yeah, to be sure.
She was nominated for her play in last year's golf tournament, okay, and state golf performance. And in golf, it's not 1A through 3A. It's all of them.
Mm.
So this is up there with the 5As, the big dogs at the big school. So Kat was nominated along with her freshman brother last year, Archie Raunhorst. Archie probably is lamenting the fact that he's not getting his golf season this year, so he will not ever get the chance to catch Kat as a four-time medalist, which I'm sure just stings him to the core.
I'm sure, but she's happy with it, though.
Yeah. You know, these two, I've gotten to know this family pretty well, just covering the accolades of the children here.
Mm-hmm.
Kat, it seemed like every spring, the two things that were constant is during the election days, there was usually something important going on with Kellogg Golf. And for 4 years, Kat Raunhorst was right in the thick of it. These two were just so humbled to be nominated and thankful that they got to be nominated together,
mm-hmm,
even though they know they don't get to go to a banquet and they know that it's not the same as it normally is. They were just thankful to have that one season to play together. Then they were complimentary of their fellow teammates and other Silver Valley athletes who, also got nominated. It was a good story to write. It felt good to write. A lot of people really enjoyed hearing about it. And it's always nice to know, you know, we got six really solid athletes. I mean, a lot of times some of these nominees, they're almost like they're nominated because there was no one else to nominate.
Right.
These six, you're talking all-state football player who's heading off to college in Mullen. You're talking league MVP for Mr. Leto in football. You're all-state basketball for Graydon Earing. State champion pedigree golfers in the round horse. And Judson Hall, another state champion. Like, these are the cream of the crop. Kellogg, we had some cream of the crop athletes in the Silver Valley this year. So these were all very worthwhile nominations.
Awesome. So let's finally jump over to our COVID-19, our most recent COVID-19 announcement.
Oh, you're going to talk?
I am going to do some talking now. Yeah, actually. So the statistics that were reported in this, obviously the coronavirus statistics change by the day. So looking at Panhandle Health District, as of today, April 8th, from the five northern counties, there are 45 confirmed cases of COVID-19. With 42 of them coming from Kootenai County and 3 of them coming from Bonner.
Huh.
Also, 3 of them have required hospitalizations. Hospitable. And 14 of those are no longer being monitored. So, kind of, we're in this area where Shoshone County is still zero, along with Boundary and Benoit counties. For the reason of this zero is widely up into interpretation at the moment. It seems like everyone has their own theory.
I think it's because they're not telling us something.
Let me get to this real quick. So for this update, we had zero diagnosed cases of COVID-19. So we actually, last one, we took a look at the nursing homes. This one, we actually took a look at another facility here in the Valley that's essential, that while not necessarily at risk like the nursing homes because of their high risk and older age, there is a grouped population that just can't go away, which is the jail population. If you think about it, they also cannot leave. And because of the nature of where they are and the building's design, it makes it very difficult for them to keep social distancing and basically stay away from each other. So ironically enough, if most of those inmates have been there for a while, they're actually pretty safe, considering that they haven't been exposed to the outside world. The problem, Sheriff Gunderson talks about, is that they are trying very hard to not introduce COVID into the jail. So, you know, while a lot of businesses have the luxury of shutting down, or, you know, begrudgingly are shutting down, the jail does not. Calls for service still come in, people still have medical emergencies, and crime still does happen. So Sheriff Gunderson talked to me about how basically they're still running status quo, but just doing things a little differently. Deputies are assigned PPE.
Personal protective equipment.
Thank you. They go on calls with that. They try their best to keep 6 feet away. If they can't, you know, it's disinfecting their gear. It's doing everything possible within the realm of possibility to keep distance. When somebody is arrested, the detention deputies take temperatures of everyone. They ask them what they've referred to as the COVID questions. Have you traveled anywhere? That kind of thing. And if they do have a temperature, or they, you know, don't like the answers that they get in the COVID questions, they're isolated for 48 hours to take a look to see if they have any symptoms or anything like that. If they don't for 48 hours, they are allowed to go into general population. It's something that is definitely, it's not a problem right now. Everyone's still fine. But the Shoshone County Jail and the public safety building, all those departments, you know, dispatch is essential. The deputies are essential. The jail staff is essential. So if one person gets exposed, it's not just the jail people. You know, those dispatchers are hard to replace. They've got certifications. Same with the deputies. You can't just call up backup deputies. You only got so many of those reservists. So it's definitely Sheriff Gunderson. They've taken certain precautions, but they're going one day at a time. And it doesn't help that in their profession, with the stay at home order, you'd maybe think that crime is down, but all it's done is shift focus. While maybe some others are down, property crimes are way up right now. And also domestic crimes. The domestic crimes are pretty obvious. You know, people are cooped up at home for long periods of time with people. We've even joked, you know, being at home with your kids and whatnot, that can get frustrating over time. So domestic crimes are definitely way up as well.
Is coronavirus really worse than homicide? Or not? Not worse than
Yeah. in any case, so they're still responding to it. They've had a steady stream of calls. They've just changed in nature, it seems like. They're really working with the community right now. As for enforcing the stay-at-home order, Gunderson doesn't really have any plans to, you know, write citations or arrest people just because they're out on the street being essential. Gunderson stressed that they're working on educating the public and saying, like, this is the best thing for you. Please help us. Work with us. Don't go out if it's not something essential. If they do get lots of complaints, maybe they'll address it for there. But no instances of citations or arrests have happened because people are breaking the essential only order. And he doesn't plan to do it at anytime soon unless somebody forces their hand.
Fortunately, Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey is considered essential.
We're not sponsored by Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey, Josh.
Yeah, but we should be. And okay. Believe me, with the amount that I consume, my presence alone is sponsored by just Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey.
Peanut Butter Whiskey.
Glenn Gooley, for the best of times.
It's an Archer reference. I like that. yeah, peanut butter whiskey just sounds like poison.
Oh, it's not.
It's
makes easily one of the best.
In any case, so let's jump over to what's occupied our time for the last, say, 12 to 16 hours. Talking about, it seems like the timing of it, since Sheriff Wheeler's comments and Heather Scott's comments have come out, it seems like people have been a little more inquisitive about the statistics coming from our medical professionals at the moment, yeah. Questioning them, you know, asking questions, essentially.
Demanding to know the information that they are entitled to by their birthright, Chance.
I'm glad that sarcasm can be picked up over the microphone because
it's dripping. It's dripping. This room is covered. It's got droplets of sarcasm all over my microphone.
Okay. So right now, since last Friday, we've been posting on our Facebook page the daily coronavirus updates from Panhandle Health District. Basically, it's a one-a-day update that talks about how many are currently have been diagnosed in the Panhandle and so on and so forth. As of probably last Friday, we have had a dedicated group of people asking how many people have been tested in Shoshone County.
No. How many people have been tested at Shoshone County?
No. It started, it evolved into that? It first started, how many Shoshone County residents have been tested for COVID-19? Right. Well, it's our jobs. We look into it. We asked Shoshone Medical Center, and they referred to us mostly to Panhandle Health because while Shoshone Medical Center can give an idea of how many they have tested, they have no way of knowing how many residents in total because not everybody who gets tested for COVID-19 goes to Shoshone Medical Center.
Right.
Josh, you yourself know at least two people?
At least two.
At least two people that have completely bypassed SMC and gone straight to Kootenai Health in Coeur d'Alene, which has been designated the COVID treatment hub for North Idaho. They've gone straight to KMC. Boy, am I a North Idaho native.
Kootenai Health.
It's Kootenai Health, yes.
If you're listening,
sorry. I was born there. Okay, I can say KMC.
I was not born there. Ryan was born there.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So at Kootenai Health, they go there, and those statistics would not be counted because Panhandle Health does not count tests. They only count positive.
Yeah,
positive tests.
They don't count the number of people per county coming to get tested.
And
they
right.
count total tests administered.
And let's clarify real quick. These people are not asking for the number of total positive tests, which, again, as of today, sits at zero. Whether it's one test or 100 tests, all of them have come back negative.
Negative.
Whether they come from Kootenai Health, Shoshone Medical Center, Sacred Heart, wherever,
General,
wherever they gotten tested.
Camp COVID.
Camp COVID. Wherever they've gotten tested, Shoshone County still sits at zero positive tests.
Yes.
Now, that's out in the open. Folks are asking how many tests have been conducted on Shoshone County residents, and the answer is that we cannot know. It is impossible to give an accurate number because those statistics are not
in fact
tracked.
I can tell you from Panhandle Health.
We can give you state numbers.
I can give you an exact comment from Panhandle Health.
Go for it.
Catherine Hoyer.
Go for it.
Testing numbers specific to county is not something that Panhandle Health is actively tracking. The state of Idaho's site gives total numbers tested through the Idaho Bureau of Laboratories and through private labs. You can check with hospitals that are sending samples to labs to see if they are tracking by county.
There you go.
That's a huge if, too.
There you go.
Because if you think here in Shoshone County or in Kootenai County, they're only serving people from Shoshone and or Kootenai County.
Right.
You would be labeled
yep.
like a 5-roll of toilet paper yep. on the COVID meter.
Yep. So we put that, we essentially put that answer in this latest COVID-19, Shoshone County COVID-19 update. We basically put that in there and let people know that this, you know, we looked into it and this is impossible to answer. We cannot give you an accurate number.
Right.
There's no way to know.
And I mean, so to partner off that, mm-hmm. just why is that number inaccurate? For a multitude of reasons.
Sure.
One being,
It's incomplete.
If we'll use a round number.
Well, here. We're not there yet. So look, just hold on. So after we reported this, now inquisitive readers of ours are now asking, well, how about we just know SMCs? Like you said that SMC can track theirs but can't track the total. Let's just hear how many SMC has tested. So
right.
Shoshone Medical Center, how many has that specific facility tested?
Right.
So now we're at this point. So it's our job to ask questions for you guys and get answers. We have reached out to SMC to get that number, and we will have their answer, whether it be an actual number or, you know, a reason why they won't give it, in our next edition, but we'll see how that goes. But we want to say whether they give a number or not right now. So say they say 40 or 100 or 1, you know, whatever the number may be, this number is incomplete and inaccurate.
Right.
It does not represent the number of total people in Shoshone County that have been tested. That number will definitely be higher. In Josh's example, he said that he knows two friends that went to Kootenai Health. That's already two people that are not included in SMC's number.
If SMC says they've tested 10 people,
we already know that number is incorrect.
And we also have to think the same way that we're thinking Shoshone people going to Kootenai Health to get tested. Mm-hmm. We have people, Kootenai County residents who live in Cataldo and Rose Lake, who still think of SMC as their local hospital. They might come over to Kellogg, to SMC, to get tested because they don't want to go to Coeur d'Alene. They don't want to drive over the pass. Yep. They don't want to brave the traffic.
Or don't have the ability.
They don't have the ability. Yep. They're more comfortable going to SMC. But if, in fact, a person in Cataldo or Rose Lake tested positive, guess what?
That's a Kootenai County statistic.
That's not even a Shoshone County statistic. That was a good question
that we did have on there, and I want to clarify that. So say a Shoshone County resident goes to Kootenai Health and tests positive. That was a good question by somebody. If that happens, that does not count as a Kootenai County positive case. That counts as a Shoshone. Just because they went to Kootenai and got tested in Kootenai and found positive in Kootenai, they are from Shoshone County, so that would count toward our statistic.
So none of our people who have been tested in Kootenai County have tested positive.
Correct.
Because if they were to have tested positive, they would be, hey, we have a guy from Shoshone.
Now, that being said, just through the loop, talking to people, we know that people have gotten tested. We know that Shoshone Medical Center is testing.
I've had that confirmed by...
We've made that very clear in our updates as well. And we have also made it very clear in our previous updates that tests right now are scarce. And they are only being reserved currently. This may change later on. But currently are only being reserved for folks in high-risk categories.
Especially over here in Shoshone.
Yes, especially over here in Shoshone.
In Kootenai, they can get away with testing a little bit.
If you check all the boxes and you have severe symptoms, yes, they might make an exception.
But over in Shoshone, you could have severe symptoms, maybe not check every box, but say you're in heart failure, or you're over the age of 60, or you're really having trouble
breathing. You'll get a test.
You have a pulmonary issue. You'll get a test.
But if you're my age.
Yeah, if you're 25 and you go in.
And you've got a low-grade fever with some minor chest congestion, you're not getting a test.
Yeah, they're going to say, hey, man, you just drink some orange juice, take some vitamin C, lock yourself in your room, you'll kick it.
And it sounds harsh, but it's not, because I just use myself as an example. I'm in the 80 percentile where I might not even develop symptoms at all.
Yeah.
I will get it, go through it, and get over it without even knowing.
With no knowledge.
Exactly.
Right.
It's very possible that that has happened already.
Right.
So,
in fact, Dr. Lawhorn believes that it's already happened.
Correct. Right. So, exactly. And we've mentioned that in the updates as well. While we still have zero cases here, it is almost guaranteed that someone here has had it or does have it currently, and they just haven't been tested. It's very possible.
Right.
100%. But the fact that none of the, because right now, again, only the at risk are getting tested. We still have zero, which is a credit to the community that we're doing a good job isolating that 20% that could be at risk.
Right. That's correct.
Absolutely. So we will follow up on this. While we have talked about how that number will be incomplete, we are still asking SMC. We will get that number for you folks, or we'll at least get their response if they don't give it out. So. Right. We'll follow up on that in the next podcast and in our Friday edition.
Perfect.
All right. Let's get on to something a little more happier, because we've got a community member here. Her place of business is actually not far from our office. Candy Gilmore has been going above and beyond, working her tail off, her and her staff.
To help kids,
to help members of our community, even the folks over at SMC. So let's kick it. We did a nice interview with her over the phone. We're trying our best to not bring people in here. So yeah. Let's kick it on over to the interview with Candy Gilmore of Mom's Vintage Eatery.
Perfect.
This week's interview is brought to you by Plan B Feed Store. Don't have time to make it over the hill for feed? Well, Plan B Feed Store has you covered. Located at their new location at 110 Hill Street in Kellogg, Plan B offers a wide range of feed for whatever critters you may have. If there is something specific you need, make sure to call owner Brenda Peterson and she can get it in stock. Be sure to stop by on Friday and Saturday to enjoy delicious barbecue provided by Guaranteed Barbecue. Plan B Feed Store can be reached at 208-660-5997. Can't make it over the hill? Time for Plan B. Hey, everybody. We are here on the phone with Mom's Vintage Eatery owner, Candy Gilmore. Candy, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing good here in the office, keeping our social distancing going on as best we can.
We do that as well.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, I mean, in your business right now, in your line of work, this whole pandemic, the whole stay-at-home order, it's definitely affected your business, hasn't it?
It has. It has affected my business, yes.
Definitely. Tell me a little bit about
as
that.
As it has everyone else's that's in this business. But it just went to curbside, and it's a little different. It's a little different. It's a little slow, but that's okay.
Right.
We're feeding kids, and that's what's important.
Right. Were you one of those businesses that, tried to hold out to the last second until, the stay-at-home order was issued, or did you try to heed the warnings early on and shut her down?
We heeded the warnings early on, and we shut down to takeout only.
Gotcha. So right now, what are your hours like right now for the takeout orders?
For takeout orders, we're Thursday through Sunday, 8 to 2. 8 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon.
Gotcha. Okay. How's that process been so far? Like, are people calling in? Are they pulling up to the side of the business? How's that been going?
Well, a lot of people are calling in. We have a few people that actually just knock on our door.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and we have, everything's posted online, so on our Facebook page, our menu, and our hours. Specials.
Gotcha. Like keeping that busy. Well, I mean, you guys are a very important part of the Osborne community. I mean, I think you're the only restaurant in Osborne.
We are.
There you go. So a lot of people rely on you guys from time to time to get some good food.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hopefully they'll continue.
Absolutely. You mentioned that it's a little slow. In addition to it, you've cut back your hours a little bit. Uh-huh. Obviously, without any foot traffic, that's kind of difficult to avoid.
It is.
What else have you been doing with your time then?
With my time,
mm-hmm.
Well, we've been doing a lot of cleaning, a lot of prepping because we prep a lot for the. It takes a lot of prep to do the meals for the kids.
So let's talk about that. One of the things that you've been doing every Tuesday, Wednesday?
The prepping? Yeah. We do it every day.
No, serving the kids.
Oh, serving the kids. It's Tuesday through Saturday.
Tuesday through Saturday. Every morning, Tuesday through Saturday, from your mom's location in Osborne and a satellite location in Wallace, you've actually been providing local kids free meals, right?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we just try to give them a free breakfast, and we have parents that pull up to the curbside. We have great volunteers that have came out to help us. They'll just put four fingers up or two fingers up or however many meals they need, and then we take them to their car.
Gotcha.
They're free for kids 2 to 18. We've had a few teenagers today, which we were excited because Wallace gets a lot of teenagers. We don't get teenagers,
mm-hmm.
But we had a few today, so that was nice. We actually did, 83, and then we had 3 latecomers, so we did 86 meals today.
Wow.
So,
wow,
yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of prep.
If you had to guess, what are you averaging right now?
We're probably averaging 75 kids a day.
Wow. That's crazy. Is it new kids, or is it? You seem like you see the same faces.
We're seeing some of the same faces, but we're actually we get new kids every day. A couple of them, kids I've never seen before. So I mean, that's good.
Yeah, that is good. The word's getting out, I guess.
Word is getting out.
Right.
And the need is here. I know that, but I was happy to see some teenagers.
So let's talk about the need for a second, because when you and I talked for the written story about this, you mentioned that this wasn't just something started for the pandemic. You've done this in the past, normally for kids during the summer, isn't that correct?
Yes, kids during the summer.
Gotcha. So for example, you know, a lot of kids, they get their one meal, their two meals a day from school. So when school is out, they kind of need that replacement, and that's where you step up, right?
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. So now that we're kind of in this unique situation where, I mean, it's not summer, but you've got kids that it's the same circumstance. You got kids that aren't going to school and they need food.
They do. They need food.
That makes sense. Well, so let's, what kind of items are you providing these kids?
Well, today we had waffles and bacon and milk and juice and a piece of fruit. We try to give them a piece of fresh fruit every day. It just depends. Sometimes we have breakfast burritos, you know. Sometimes we have pancakes and sausage. You know, it just, you know, we had biscuits and gravy yesterday.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, but it always comes with the juice, a milk, sometimes a granola bar, you know, but always a fresh piece of fruit.
How did you get the idea to do this, like this whole process, and why?
Well, when we came here, almost 5 years ago, I interviewed some kids because I wanted to do some stuff for the kids in the Valley. And I interviewed 17 kids, and one of the girls said I said, what could we do as a business for you kids? And she said, well, we could do a dance, because, I mean, they evidently didn't have dances very often. And I said, oh, that would be fun. You know, we could maybe put that together for you. But then I interviewed the other 16 kids individually, and I heard story after story about fetus, different stories about, you know, a friend's parent was out of work, or I had one young man whose parents were both working, but they were struggling to put food on the table. And, you know, he said, I don't want to tell them that I'm hungry because I don't want them to fight.
Right.
And they were just, it's just typical stories when, you know, families are struggling trying to make ends meet. You know, there were a couple with, these are high school kids, you know, talking. Mm-hmm. And there were a few where, you know, so-and-so's mom, you know, sells her food stamps, and addiction's high. I get that. I did foster care. We did foster care in Washington for 100 and some kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we understand that. I mean, as we raise kids ourselves, I mean, and it gets expensive. And so we just decided that we would feed the kids in the summertime and try to help alleviate some of that, some of the stress for the parents. And, you know, it's a hard time. And right now it's really hard because people are afraid.
Absolutely.
They're scared of, yeah, they're losing jobs. They have no idea what's going on. People are getting sick and people are dying. So it's, you know, we have to keep it up, and we just have to keep the kids fed and healthy, and, you know, working with Child Protective Services, you also understand that there's key things that happen with kids for abuse. And money, unfortunately, is an issue. You know, when money's tight, tempers flare, and sometimes kids get hurt, and we don't want that to happen either. So there is a need in the Valley. There is. I mean, there's been a need for a long time, and we're just trying to help the kids out that way.
Absolutely. Well, and what you're doing is, I mean, also going in turn with what the local schools are doing as well.
Right. So, you know, if they can get a lunch at school and a breakfast from us, that's great. It's open to all the kids in the Valley, not just Wallace District, but all the kids. And we're seeing more and more kids from Kellogg. So I think it's good. And I think it's good for the community to get together and to come together and take care of the kids. I mean, because that's what we're supposed to do.
Right.
So, you know, I grew up here. That's the way they did it before.
Right. It's a sense of community.
It's a community. Yeah. And I think the sense of community with this pandemic has really grown. And I think it's basically getting back to basics. And we're just trying to help people along.
No.
I know more people are cooking and, you know, experimenting that way, and because there's a lot of people that don't cook. And I think it's great. I mean, you know, and parents have been very appreciative. We've gotten such cute little things from kids, you know, thank you notes that they've drawn and different things. And it just warms your heart and it makes it all special. And they actually get excited to see you in the morning when you're bringing out things. So it's been good for our volunteers as well. We've had a lot of business people and stay-at-home moms come out and, you know, help put breakfast together and serve the kids. And, you know, we've had people that have serving the kids in tears because it's just like, oh my gosh, they're so thankful and they're so polite and they're just good little kids. And they said, you know, they're feeling good about themselves helping out. And I think it's contagious, you know, kindness is contagious.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's awesome, so, Candy. That's awesome that you and your guy, and you've also mentioned also on your Facebook post, you know, this is not just a solo effort. Volunteers have definitely been stepping up to help as well.
People have been stepping up to help as well. They've brought donations in, like drinks and fruit snacks, applesauce, things like that, and they've brought money, and people are giving their time. And, it costs about $3.52 per meal a day. So it's expensive. I mean, I wasn't expecting that many kids, but we're glad that we have that many kids because a lot of parents are kind of guarded. And I think they're like trusting a little bit more is like, oh, well, you know, we need help and they're going to help us. And that's great. You know, and we've had people that are like, oh, you know, we don't qualify for this. There's no qualifying. You know, I don't care if both parents are working and it's a, you know, you're having a tough time because you have no idea what's going to happen. We're just here. We want to help you. We want to help your kids.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you're already keeping busy with this and, you know, keeping the business going when it's open. You also somehow find time to also go to businesses that you feel like, you know, need some help, you know, public servants and whatnot. I caught wind that you went over to SMC and helped them out. Yesterday when we were planning on doing this yesterday, you were going over to the post office and you delivered some meals over there. What's, you just kind of, you know, say, hey, we need to go help these people out today.
Well, I think part of it, I arranged it ahead of time and said, hey, we'd like to bring you lunch because they're working really hard, you know, and I don't think people think about the post office. I mean, they might think about the hospital, but it was like we were really slow, and it was like, let's make lunch for the hospital. It's just kind of a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants type thing, but it was, I think they need to know that people are, like, appreciative, and, you know, I am a restaurant owner, so it's like, I'll bring you some food.
Awesome.
And I just think that they need to know that we are thankful that they're there and that they're doing a job. And I think sometimes people get overlooked. So
you're just making sure that they're not overlooked.
We are.
I love it.
Making sure that they know how thankful we are for their work that they are doing.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Candy, thank you so much for talking to us today. Before we let you go, I want you to let the people know. So when are those breakfasts again being served?
The breakfasts actually are from Tuesday through Saturday. Saturday, they get a double pack for the weekend. They're from 9:30 to 10:30, and they're 9:30 to 11:30 in Wallace. We do serve meals later here. At Mom's, but those are our designated times for our volunteers. But you can still, if you need meals, you can just come up to the door and we'll make sure that we have them for you.
Gotcha. If somebody wanted to call you guys or get a hold of you to get more information or maybe, you know, figure something else out, how would they go about doing that?
Well, they could call us at Mom's at 556-1668, or they can get a hold of us on Mom's Vintage Eatery Facebook page.
Okay.
Awesome. Or they can call me, you know, on 416-9426.
Perfect.
And that's my cell phone number.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, Candy, again, thank you for so much for talking with us today. It's really awesome what you're doing in the community, and I hope you keep it up.
Thanks. I hope we're able to do it as long as we can and as long as it's needed. So, but, you know, the community's been very good, very helpful, and that's nice.
Always asking for volunteers. More hands make less work.
That's right.
Absolutely. That's right. All right. Thanks again, Candy. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Bye. And thanks again to Candy Gilmore for calling in and talking with us about the wonderful, awesome things that she's doing in the community, helping people out there in the time of need, helping the schools feed some kids. Yeah. That's definitely been a big concern for a lot of people when the schools closed. I know, you know, getting their learn on is definitely something that's important, but a lot of these kids rely on schools to get their only food for the day.
Yep.
And during these times, if anybody can be helping out the schools, that's a good thing. So kudos to Candy. She's really helping out.
Yeah.
So let's with no sports going on, we're just going to jump right into regional headlines. Josh, what do we got?
So my first regional headline we've got comes out of the Coeur d'Alene Press, and a woman dies in U.S. 95 crash. Kind of a sad one right out of the gate. A Sandpoint woman died in a Tuesday night crash on northbound U.S. 95 at Kerrywood Road north of Athol. Jasmine G. Dandurand, 35, of Sandpoint, was traveling northbound in a silver 2000 Nissan Maxima when she failed to negotiate a left turn. The vehicle entered the northbound ditch, turned sideways, striking a telephone pole, and then began to roll. Dandurand was not wearing a seatbelt, police said, and was ejected from the vehicle. Police, Idaho State Police responded to the scene at 8:30 p.m. Dandurand was declared dead on the scene. The northbound lane was blocked for approximately 3 hours. Next of kin has been notified. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier. We have these straight stretches, whether it's U.S. 95 or Highway 41 that goes through Post Falls and Rathdrum. People have more issues driving on these stretches. I mean, I'm trying to think. So you're heading northbound on U.S. 95, north of Athol. There's not a ton of turns in that road. And there's nothing significant that you would think that you would lose control, right? Nothing.
This has been something that has always been for as long. It's the stretches of 40. I grew up in Post Falls, so the stretch of Highway 41 from Post Falls to Rathdrum, there's always there. And then once you get through Rathdrum, if you follow it, like if you're heading toward Spirit Lake, that stretch right there, that's always been dangerous. And then US 95 heading up to Sandpoint. I mean, not trying to take away from I-90. I mean, we live here in the Silver Valley. We see accidents, it seems like, almost once a week,
right,
in some way, shape, or form. But it really seems like that's just such a dangerous, like when you hear about a crash on 95, turns out it's usually not good.
No. And these, like, these random crashes on relatively
straight,
relatively easy to drive roads, and most often they end in fatalities.
Yep.
It's just kind of crazy.
Makes sense.
What do you got?
Coming out of the Coeur d'Alene Press, written by anybody. Kootenai Health purchases Clearwater Valley and St. Mary's Hospitals. This is a big deal. Ownership of Clearwater Valley Hospital and Clinics, CVHC, and St. Mary's Hospital and Clinics, SMH, officially transferred to Kootenai Health on April 1st. Clearwater Valley Hospital is located in Orofino, Idaho. It has two clinics located in Orofino and Kuski?
Yeah.
Kuski? One rural health clinic in Pierce and one physical therapy clinic located in Orofino. St. Mary's Hospital is located in Cottonwood, Idaho. It has five clinics located in Cottonwood, Grangeville, Kamei, Craigmont, and Nez Pierce, and three physical clinics, therapy clinics located in Cottonwood, Grangeville, and Kamei. Last August, the North Central Idaho Critical Access Hospitals announced they have entered into a letter of intent to transfer ownership from Essentia Health to Kootenai Health. Since that time, the three organizations have been working to finalize the terms of the partnership, develop a transition plan, and seek their respective organizational board's approval. This partnership is intended to strengthen healthcare in North Central Idaho. It will create an environment where the organizations can share knowledge, information, resources, and best practices. Any changes that come as a result of the new relationship, however, will be paced and thoughtful. This especially is true of now that healthcare providers across the country are working to address COVID-19. Quote, Clearwater Valley and St. Mary's are strong organizations with good programs, processes, and cultures, said Jeremy Evans, Executive Vice President of Hospital and Regional Operations at Kootenai Health. What a title. Our intent is to keep that and lean from their rural expertise. At the same time, Kootenai Health brings resources and expertise as an advanced regional health center. Our work together will benefit the entire North Idaho region.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's actually it's probably good. As we mentioned before, Kootenai Health is the COVID hub for North Idaho, so kind of makes sense, the timing of everything.
And not, we're not saying anything against this, but it's not uncommon anymore that you see a lot of these bigger health organizations start absorbing some of these smaller places and putting them under their umbrella. A lot of it helps with continuity. It helps with the financial side of things. It really is a benefit when you start seeing these, kind of like the Providence Health Network, Sacred Heart, Holy Cross, or Holy Family Hospital. And then that same network also has hospitals like St. Luke's down in Boise and St. Alphonsus Hospital. Like, there's, it's just crazy when they start doing these networking things. Good things happen. They tend to be more positive and you see more growth.
Makes sense.
When these hospitals start doing stuff like this.
Makes sense.
Next story for me, coming out of the Bonner County Daily Bee. Woman accused of harboring fugitive. And this is a follow-up to a story we talked about a few weeks ago at a Priest River by Keith Kennard. Legal troubles are mounting for a local woman awaiting sentencing in a felony child endangerment case. Sheena Elizabeth Adams was arrested last Wednesday. Which would have been, April 1st, on charges of harboring accused felon William Scott Wagner and compounding a crime to hinder prosecution by providing him money and property while he hid out in a remote area in Arizona earlier this month. Adams, age 36, made an initial appearance in the Bonner County Magistrate Court on Thursday. It was not immediately clear what her bail was set at and if a public defender was appointed to represent her. Adams is accused of facilitating Wagner's flight from October 2019 to March of this year when she was confronted by a member of the U.S. Marshals Service Fugitive Task Force in Ponderay on March 4th. Bonner County Grand Jury indicted Wagner on two counts of lewd conduct and one count of rape last year. He's also accused of molesting and raping another child between the ages of 12 and 14, between the years of 2017 and 2019. Wagner pleaded not guilty and a bench trial was set. He was arrested earlier this month in Apache County, Arizona. Adams, a probable cause affidavit, alleges admitted earlier this month that she had received a letter from Wagner on the eve of his trial indicating that he was leaving the area and asking her to care for his son. Adams did not advise authorities that she had received the letter, the affidavit said. She ultimately admitted that she had a second cell phone hidden in her vehicle, which she used to stay in daily contact with him, the affidavit said. She also said that Wagner sent her his bank card so she could withdraw cash and have it sent to him in Arizona by the mother of Wagner's other son's girlfriend. Investigators also recovered from her vehicle a small piece of mail bearing an address in St. John's, Arizona. So, it also emerged in recent court filings that Adams was looking for a woman to carry Wagner's child because she could not. A witness in the case told investigators she believes the couple planned to impregnate the teen with Wagner's child.
Huh. Okay, then.
Bonner County.
So coming out of the Daily Interlake.
Only in Bonner County. Where the level of COVIDity runs rampant.
No, it doesn't. It violates constitutional rights is what it does,
George. Right, that group.
Coming out of the Daily Interlake, Glacier High student uses 3D printers to make masks. It's written by Mackenzie Reese. Glacier High School sophomore Trevor Seals has been fascinated with 3D printers ever since he began working with them in Troy Smith's engineering class. Seals started out printing puzzles to donate to Toys for Tots that, pardon me, that soon evolved into rockets, which he launched from his grandparents' pasture, and then key rings for Straight Blast Gym. But in his latest venture, this is a little bit different. He's not printing for fun, but to fill a need. He's among a handful of people in the Flathead Valley using 3D printers to produce N95 masks. Ever since the coronavirus pandemic hit, the need for these protective masks has ballooned, especially within the healthcare industry. In many hospitals around the country, providers are forced to reuse their N95 masks, which should be shed between patients and patient interactions, according to Centers for Disease Control, while others in more dire straits are getting through their shifts with only bandanas and cloth masks to protect them. Schools were being approached about using 3D printers to make masks. However, Seals' engineering teacher had just returned from New Zealand and he was self-quarantined. But Seals knew that he had the skills to run the printer. He and his father, Lincoln, asked the high school if they could operate the printers instead. The school sent for four printers. The school sent 4 printers worth thousands of dollars home with the 16-year-old, and he's been printing around the clock ever since. Wow. Quote, I like being a part of a group that's trying to do something good, Trevor said. I'd rather be a part of the solution than part of the problem.
Well, good for him.
What a fine young man.
Stand-up kid.
Absolutely. Kudos for him.
Yeah. So that does it for regionals, and that does it. This has been just a beast of a podcast.
Yeah, it's been a good one, though. Lots of information. Yeah, lots of information back to a normal structure. I know over the last couple editions we threw some curveballs at you, but we're right back on track. We've just... things have been goofy during the pandemic.
Yeah, things get weird. But, you know, once again, we'd like to thank Silver Valley Tire for this week's episode. Silver Valley Tire is currently offering a $70 mail-in rebate from now until April 20th off select Cooper Tires. Stop in at 407 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg or call 208-784-1181 with any questions.
Awesome. All right, everybody. This has been us for episode 41. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff. You can find all of our stories at ShoshoneNewsPress.com. Please leave a nice review. We appreciate those. It helps us reach more audiences and get the word out about Shoshone County, North Idaho, and the regional area.
Yep, yep, yep.
If you guys have any requests or hints or tips or... I mean, gripes, we don't want to hear those, but,
take your complaints and file them in the trash.
Exactly, the round file.
Yeah.
Just throw them right in there, crumple them up.
Send them to Representative Heather Scott.
Okay. In any case, we really appreciate those. And it's thanks again for listening, everybody. Yes, we really appreciate it. We hope we're giving you some knowledge and some laughs while you're sitting in quarantine, and we'll continue to do so as we all navigate through this strange time.
We will quarantine you to entertain you.
All right, everybody. See you next week.
Bye-bye.